From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome aboard. Glad to have you to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. And we have a lot coming your way today on Washington Watch. First of all, mediators and Israeli negotiators met in Qatar today for another round of negotiations to end the war in Gaza and to bring home the hostages that are still being held by Hamas. But notably absent from today's sessions, Hamas.
This is it is an important step, as we've said, that in the lead up to this meeting, there we have already narrowed some gaps, and the focus now is on some of the more specific implementation and specific issues as it relates to the agreement.
Well, that was Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel earlier today, trying the best he could to spin the negotiations after Hamas failed to participate. Today also marks, as we dealt with yesterday, today is the third year anniversary of the fall of Kabul following the Biden administration's horrible withdrawal from Afghanistan. And the Taliban marked the occasion in Afghanistan with a parade showing off the more than $80 billion worth of U.S. military equipment that was abandoned there by the Biden administration. I'll talk more about that and much more with Michigan Congressman Tim Walberg here in just a few moments. And the vice presidential candidates agreed today to a televised debate that will be taking place on October 1st. But as the scrutiny of Democrat vice presidential candidate Tim Walz increases, so do the questions regarding his record and political agenda. Sam Faddis is a retired CIA operations officer and the senior editor of And magazine. He'll be joining me a little bit later for that conversation. And then we'll continue to monitor the threat that big banks pose to American freedom by targeting conservatives and Christian organizations. Jerry Boyer, who is president of the Boyer Research, he'll provide an update what's going on and how many red states have been pushing back. And then David Cox from the Arkansas Family Council will join me to share what happened to his organization when J.P. Morgan Chase targeted them. So as always, we've got a lot coming your way. Our website is always tonyperkins.com. Lots of information there available for you. We encourage you to keep that website handy. It's something that you will certainly use once you use it once. All right, let's jump into the first topic for today. Mediators and officials from Israel met today in Qatar, as I mentioned. The purpose was to have an intense negotiation to end the war in Gaza and to return the hostages that are still being held by Hamas. And, of course, all of this comes on this, the third anniversary of the fall of Kabul, which many believe set a pattern for the Biden administration's inept handling of foreign policy. Also, closer to home, Columbia University President Manu Shafiq resigned. All this comes following widespread criticism of her handling of the pro-Hamas student protest on the campus of Columbia. Well, joining me now to discuss this process and much more is Congressman Tim Walberg. He serves on the House Committee on Education and Workforce, as well as the Energy and Commerce Committee. He represents the 5th Congressional District of the great state of Michigan. Congressman Walberg, always good to see you, my friend. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Jody, it's great to be with you. It's good to see you. It's also good to see you're doing very well.
Well, thank you so much. And likewise, listen, we've got a lot to discuss here, Congressman. It's kind of like where in the world do you begin? But before we get to the latest news, let's start with this. As you are well aware, today is the third anniversary of the fall of Kabul, all of this happening on President Biden's watch. Is it fair, in your opinion, for people such as myself even to draw the timeline that this withdrawal, the disastrous withdrawal that it was, actually has set a pattern, if you will, a foreign policy of this current administration?
Oh, absolutely. I'll never forget. I was in Ukraine from Lviv to Kyiv to Odessa over the Orthodox Easter, pretty much after the start of the war, and after the fall of Kabul, and our terrible, horrific, as well as embarrassing withdrawal from Afghanistan, leaving American citizens there, as well as supportive Afghanis who had stood strongly with us and with our troops, leaving there, in some cases, to die. And when I was in Kyiv, talking with military soldiers of Ukrainian army, they brought that up. They brought that up as a concern of how it was perceived in the world and what the strength of the United States would be. And at that time, we were negotiating in support against Russia and for Ukraine. I think we've seen it go on with Iran. I think we've seen it go on with China. All who saw the weakness of our country and its policy has lived out when a withdrawal was expected, when President Trump had planned for it, had negotiated the means by which the Taliban would respect our withdrawal, that we would keep forces there, that we would hold the airfield, and that we would have eyes on the ground still in that region. That all changed with the election of the present president, who immediately after being sworn into office showed a weakness, and it blew up full tilt during the Afghan withrawal.
It sure did. Yeah, Congressman, and just to, I guess, put an exclamation point on what you're saying, I don't know if you were able to see the role that we had even while I was talking, but over $80 billion of U.S. military equipment was left there. I remember you and myself and many members of Congress were screaming about this. And I remember General Milley saying, well, it's too expensive to bring all that stuff back. And now our enemies have possession of those pieces of equipment and using it against Israel and us and who knows who else.
And the technology that's there, I saw some of the vehicles that were built in my district being paraded across that field today. This is evidence of what the world thinks of us, specifically. Those enemies of freedom, of democracy, and of the West. And again, we are the big Satan in the eyes of the radical Muslims. And that begins with Iran, who indeed will foster what goes on with the Taliban and others against the United States. And this has to change in our elections soon to take place. We have to go into that wide-eyed and understanding that we can't negotiate strength anymore. We have to prove it.
Yep, absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. You know, for 3 years now, we've heard the Biden administration push the narrative that Vice President Harris was a partner in all these major decisions. In fact, here's how Vice President Harris responded to the disaster back in 2021. I'm going to play this clip. Do we not have clip two? All right, well,
but there's no question that what many of us have seen on television, as the president has said, I mean, the president has, I think, shown great emotion in expressing sadness about some of the images we have seen. But we cannot be in any way distracted in any way from what must be our primary mission right now, which is evacuating people from that region who deserve to be.
All right, so she was part of all the major decisions, they say, and there she was supporting this decision to evacuate. But now she is attempting to avoid any accountability. Your thoughts?
Well, she can't get away from that if we get that message out. That is her belief. That was her beliefs back then. Now, Jody, I don't believe that she or President Joe Biden were running this country or have been running this country. There's a cabal behind them with an initiative to change this country from the inside out. And that also responds to the whole globalist desire, which will not work. America has to be there at the top of the heap. We're the only nation that has the power and the potential and the moral clarity, if we use it, to define what takes place in the world, not build nations, but rather demonstrate what a true constitutional democracy and freedom is all about. This president and would-be president, Kamala Harris, they don't understand it the way we do. And because of that, America will be hurt with them at the helm.
No question about it. If I can just go a little bit further, somewhat of a different topic, but same general ballpark. Israel, of course, remains on high alert for an attack from Iran. And today, Hamas refused to join the ceasefire negotiations. Your thoughts and reaction to that?
Well, when you don't have the strength of purpose coming from our White House now, and the negotiation potential, and an unwillingness to really stand four square with Israel, you know, the vice president chose to go to a sorority gathering,
yep,
and speak there as opposed to being there on the floor. As you recollect, you were there when Netanyahu, yep, spoke one time. I was there again, and I heard a man with moral clarity call for America to join. But if we didn't, Israel would stand alone against all of the nations that would want to destroy them and the United States and the West, to speak of the rest of the story. So this is a concern. And to think that Kamala Harris, who even the media were deriding just 3 weeks ago, is beginning this honeymoon with the potential of becoming commander-in-chief of a weakened force, not because of our troops, but because of the leadership. What that says to Hamas, why should they negotiate? What that says to Iran, why should they stop their nuclear development? What's that says to Russia, why should they keep their incursion and taking over countries? And certainly, what does that say to China, that has said very clearly to us, they will dominate the world, including America. We need to believe our enemies and stand up strongly, and that means who we pick for a leader. And I'll very clearly state, it should not be Kamala Harris or Tim Walz, but it should be Donald Trump.
Yeah, these are unbelievably uncertain and frightening days. And this is the time to, what we say around here all the time, Congressman, is to pray, to vote,
yeah,
and to stand. And all that takes place at the ballot box. Congressman Tim Walberg, I always enjoy talking with you. It's been an honor to be a friend for a long, long time and continue that relationship. We appreciate you coming on Washington Watch. Wish we had more time. I'd love to get into Columbia University and the resignation of the president there. I know you were right involved in so much of that. But unfortunately, our time has expired. Congressman Tim Walberg from Michigan, thank you so much for all you do, and thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you. God bless you, Jody.
Thank you. All right, friends, much, much more coming your way right here on Washington Watch, and you don't want to miss it. We're going to dive deeper into the relationship of Governor Walz with the Communist Chinese Party. We're going to go deep into this. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned. Right after the break, we'll cover it.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you. I'm Jody Heiss, your host. All right. As we have seen the past several days, no doubt, the Democrat / legacy media, and I put it that way intentionally, that media machine has been pulling out all the stops to somehow try to portray governor and Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Walz as some sort of moderate Midwestern Democrat. But quite frankly, anyone who is even remotely honest, anyone who has a clue of what's going on in the world, knows that he is anything but that. And we want to dive deeper into that and the facade that the media is trying to create of Tim Walz. And joining me now is author Sam Faddis. He is a retired CIA operations officer. He served in the Near East and South Asia. He's also host of Ground Truth. Sam, welcome to Washington Watch. It is indeed an honor to have you.
It is a pleasure to be here, sir. Thank you.
Well, thanks to you. I want to go back and stress what I said about you. You formerly were with the CIA, operations officer, for many years. You literally, I think it's safe to say, ran spies in other countries. And so you know a lot more than any of us on all of this. When it comes to Governor Walz, over the decades of a very cozy relationship with China, from a spycraft type terminology, what are you concerned about?
Well, look, I think you are looking at an individual that is completely compromised by the communist Chinese. And, you know, we used to talk about this in terms of the business of recruiting sources and running sources, which was this my central duty at the Central Intelligence Agency. We talk about it in terms of being pulled down a rabbit hole. How far are you compromised? Was he ever fully recruited by Chinese intelligence and taking money from them and run literally as a spy? I don't know. What is evident is that the man has had an incredibly cozy relationship with the Chinese government, not just the Chinese people, for 30 years, that he says nothing but positive things about a brutal totalitarian regime that essentially imprisons a billion people. And you know, it has no criticism, nothing but positive things to say. And the deeper you go into this, the more you see a guy who, at this point, I mean, he thinks the Chinese Communist Party is on the right side of history. We're the bad guys. This is not your uncle from Indiana who's a good old-fashioned Midwestern boy. This is, look, when this guy was named as the vice presidential choice of Kamala Harris to be her running mate, the first people that came out and congratulated her and him were the Democratic Socialists of America, a communist party, pro-Chinese party inside the United States. So I think it's pretty clear what you got.
Yeah. Wow, that's sobering even to think about that. There's so much here, Sam, that I'd love to go in with you. And look, I'm by no means trying to imply, is he a spy? I appreciate your answer with that. And I'm not trying to insinuate that in any shape, form, or fashion. But there is a degree of concern. There's no question about this relationship, as you describe it, a cozy relationship. Let me ask you this. In your opinion, is he worthy of having the security clearance that would be required as a vice president? Is that concerning at all to you?
No, look, the guy couldn't get a security clearance to work on the loading dock at CIA, right? I mean, I don't even understand. As a senior enlisted member of the National Guard, I don't understand, quite frankly, how he maintained that security clearance with 30 trips back and forth to communist China. And by the way, guys, I mean, anybody watching this, these were trips on which he took large numbers of Americans and toured around and did all sorts of things on the ground in China. Well, okay, but you don't do that. Like, as a private citizen, you just don't load up 60 Americans and go conduct these kind of programs on Chinese soil. You have to have the approval and the cooperation of the Chinese government to do that. It's not a free society, obviously. So that's 30 trips that one way or the other he was doing in cooperation with the Chinese government. Look, when he was inaugurated as governor of Minnesota, the Chinese consulate sent a special representative to congratulate him and stand next to him. Okay, well, if you're a critic of China, that doesn't happen, and you don't keep going back and forth to China, right? The only way that happens is because you're saying the things they want you to say. If you're bringing Americans literally dozens and dozens of students to China and touring the country, and they're letting you do it, and in some cases it appears actually funding him to do it, well, we understand as a matter of common sense what that means. You are delivering the message the Chinese Communist Party wants you to deliver. If you were showing up and criticizing their totalitarian regime, you'd find you weren't welcomed back, right?
Yeah, good question. And you just brought up, to my knowledge, at least, Walz has never explained where the money came from to finance all these trips.
No.
We've got just a minute left, and then I appreciate you staying over the break because I've got some more questions for you. But any idea who paid for these trips?
Well, look, as far as I can determine so far, and I always try to be careful and factual and stand on firm ground. His initial trip to China when he taught was done in cooperation with and largely paid for by the Chinese. And at least one of the trips that he did early on also was sponsored by them. I'm in the same place you are. After that, where the money came from for 29 more visits to China remains unclear. But again, he was taking dozens of people. He wasn't paying for this out of his pocket, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, even their wedding, their honeymoon over there, I understand there was a huge, like 60 students or whatever.
Absolutely.
I think
yes.
I'm close in the ballpark with that.
Yes.
Somebody had to pay for that, all of it. All right, Sam Faddis, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for holding over the break. Friends, don't go anywhere. We're going to continue this discussion with Sam Faddis about Tim Walz's Chinese Communist Party connections. extremely important to know as much as we can about this. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
I'm continuing my conversation now with Sam Faddis regarding Minnesota governor and Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz and the disturbing connections that he has had for over 30 years with the Chinese Communist Party. Sam, again, thank you for staying over the break. I really appreciate that. You mentioned a little bit earlier about here's an individual who has said nothing but positive comments about the communist regime. What are some of the specific praises that he has made? If you can kind of take us there into his mind and the type of attitude he has towards the Communist Party of China.
Well, when he came back from spending his initial, he taught in China for a year, circa 1990. When he came back, you know, his response, his commentary was something to the effect of, he would never be treated that well again in his life, no matter where he went, no matter what he did.
Wow.
People that have come out online since who were with him at various points in China describe how he was constantly the guy insisting on other Americans not criticizing the Chinese regime, not criticizing its oppression of people. Apparently buying dozens of copies of Mao's Little Red Book to pass out to people. This has been the tenor of his commentary about China forever. I said before the break that a consular official, Chinese consular official attended his inauguration as governor, but Walz has actually appeared at a whole bunch of events inside the United States put on by the Chinese Communist Party. And people should understand that the concept of the United Front and elite capture, the Chinese have a whole of government approach. Every one of their government institutions that operate abroad have the purpose of co-opting people and getting them to do what the Chinese want. And they refer to the concept as elite capture. So anybody of significance in a target country, and obviously we would be target number one, a politician, a corporate leader, anybody they, you know, a government official, anybody they think has pull, they work overtime to co-opt them through a whole host of entities that all are about Chinese, you know, have labels like Chinese Friendship Association. It's only one objective, just bend these people to the will of the Chinese. Well, Walz has a long history of cooperating with these associations, appearing at their events, and basically singing the praises of a totalitarian regime. So I get it now. He wants to reinvent himself and say he loves the Chinese people, but he was always fighting communism. Well, I'm sorry, there's 30 years of evidence that says the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, coming into home now as governor of Minnesota, is connections with Global Minnesota, to me, seems to indicate, and tell me if I'm barking up the right tree, but his relationship with Global Minnesota seems to indicate that his view of allowing a hostile foreign government to literally operate within U.S. borders. Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%. So Global Minnesota is this outfit that hosts what the Chinese call, you know, everything's a euphemism, their Chinese overseas service centers. Well, they're basically police stations for the Chinese state, but police stations in the sense that their job is to hunt down, pressure, in some cases apprehend, and literally drag away to China dissidents. So their purpose around the world is to find the guys who are trying to fight for democracy in China and end that. They do it in a variety of ways. I mean, like I say, some cases they drag them home. In other cases, they just show up with a picture of your grandmother and let you know that grandma, who's still back home, is going to pay the price if you don't shut up. Well, Walz is tied to Global Minnesota, and he's done nothing to shut down that service center that operates in Minnesota.
All right, let me try to wrap this up if I can, Sam, and thank you for this incredible conversation and the information you've brought to the table that everyone needs to be aware of. What kind of information would you like to know about Walz's relationship with Communist China that we don't currently know? What would you like to have brought to the table and questions answered?
Well, to start with what we talked about a little bit ago, I'd like to address the financial issues. You have had this ongoing enterprise for three decades, taking by this point hundreds and hundreds of Americans to China. Who paid for that? And how about a list of all of your contacts in the Chinese Communist Party by name and affiliation? Because what you're going to find is there are no clear separations amongst the agencies with Communist China. What you're going to find is that some of these guys are flat-out intelligence officers. They're Chinese spies. I mean, that's what you're going to find. But the kind of disclosure that you ought, you know, if I was applying for a job and trying to get a security clearance and I'd been going back and forth to China for 30 years, I'd be writing dozens and dozens and dozens of pages of full disclosure. Who, what, where, when, why, money. This guy wants to be a heartbeat away from the presidency. He ought to provide the same.
Do you think we'll get that information in the course of the campaign real quickly?
Not a prayer, right? That's the Kamala Harris campaign is all about not divulging anything and creating a false reality. So, no.
Wow. Sam Faddis, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the program, providing us this very thoughtful and concerning discussion. We appreciate it a great deal. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, don't go anywhere. We've got a lot more Washington Watch coming your way right after the break, and we will do so momentarily. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com. jodyheiss.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, and good afternoon to you. Hope you're having a great day. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. All right. We've discussed many, many times here on Washington Watch that it's not just big government that threatens Americans' freedom. But given their power over essential services, big banking and big tech, for that matter, they can be a threat as well. And we're all aware of the censorship of big tech platforms, for example, and how they engaged both before and after the 2020 elections. But we've also seen banks implementing policies that target Christian and conservative organizations. Well, joining me now by phone to discuss this is Jerry Boyer. He's the president of Boyer Research. Jerry, welcome back to Washington Watch. We appreciate you joining us.
Jody, it's a pleasure to be with you again.
Well, thank you so much. All right, this debanking issue is a critical issue. It seems like we're seeing more and more of this becoming a threat, and we've discussed that here on the program. And I will just say this, notably, J.P. Morgan Chase seems to have backed away from at least some of their discriminatory practices. So let's start there. Do you think this is because the potential PR nightmare that has forced them into backing up some?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's two things. One, I think they picked on the wrong guy when they debanked Sam Brownback. I mean, it's one thing to maybe debank people who have fringe views or something like that, or can maybe even be portrayed as having fringe views. But the former, you know, governor of Kansas and senator from Kansas and international ambassador for religious liberty is a very, very mainstream American person, very likable, has a real George Bailey quality to him. So when his bank account was canceled with no good reason given, that was just too much. It was just a terrible mistake. I happen to have been involved with that very deeply. I worked with a financial advisor, David Bonson, to put a proposal on the ballot for J.P. Morgan Chase. We worked very closely with Alliance Defending Freedom on that as well. And David put his proposal forward. It did not get majority support. We maybe need to talk about this because there are people who are fighting this fight with the companies and putting proposals on the ballots, and Christians don't know. So Christians who own stock in J.P. Morgan Chase didn't vote for that, you know, and because they didn't even know that voting is going on. And we had a lot of conversations with J.P. Morgan Chase that really lasted more than a year. I'm not going to say everything's perfect, but they were very productive, and they ended up putting viewpoint discrimination protection in writing on their website. They dropped the social risk category from their WePay payment system. Social risk says that we can cancel your account if we think that you're socially risky. Well, it's completely subjective. I mean, you know, something that's socially risky in Manhattan is not the same thing as something that's socially risky in Pittsburgh, where I'm from. So, you know, socially risky is very much in the eye of the beholder. So I'd say two things. One, it was a PR nightmare because Sam Brownback is such a likable person. And clearly debanking him was a terrible mistake. But two, in this particular case, instead of Christians complaining from a distance, which is what I've seen for a long time, we just complain about big tech censorship. We complain about debanking. We talk about those banks, but we don't talk to them. We don't show up for the annual meeting. We don't vote our proxies. And then we're surprised when these banks go bad. I'm a Christian. I believe that every institution to which we do not apply salt is constantly in a state of rot. So we have to apply that salt. So I think them overreaching plus the media backlash from conservative media and then engagement, which was not threatening engagement. We just reasoned with them and they really changed some policies, and we have ongoing constructive conversations. So to me, this is outrage turned into action, not just outrage stuck in outrage stage.
And that's the way it ought to be. I mean, the vast, vast majority of times when we show up, like what you're talking about, we win. And I was not aware of your role in all that with JPMorgan Chase. Hats off. Thank you for stepping up in the action you took. We've now seen a number of red states that have passed laws essentially banning this practice of debanking. Have they been effective, in your opinion?
I think they have been effective. It's funny. Coincidentally, I happen to be, I won't say which state because it's confidential, but I'm driving home from a meeting with the pension board of a state that's taking on these issues. So what's happening is red state treasurers and pension boards are beginning to say, wait a minute, this is our money or it's our beneficiaries' money. And these proxy advisory services or these asset managers like BlackRock are voting with our money, and they're voting against our values and against our interest, including on debanking proposals. So, you know, I think red states need to ask about that. And yes, it has been effective. It's been effective in getting some of these companies to back off from the anti-carbon, the anti-fossil fuel agenda, and also on the abortion agenda. I've seen the state of Texas, for instance, and we were involved with this one too. State of Texas confronted the proxy advisory services, which are the groups that really affect the vote, say, we don't want you pushing abortion anymore. People don't realize this, but activists were putting proposals on ballots of major American companies, pressuring them to divest from pro-life states, which is ridiculous. They're saying it's a business risk to do business in a pro-life state. Those things were getting close to majority support. Texas intervened. We also talked to the proxy advisory services. They changed their policies, and they went from 40% support to the last abortion proposal this year was on the Google annual meeting. It was a proposal to pressure Google to suppress crisis pregnancy centers in its search engine results. Terrible, egregious proposal. But here's the good news. It got 7% support. 93% voted against it. 2 years ago, these things were getting 40% support. So again, we talk about the companies, but we don't talk to them. Christians need to start talking to them. And Christians need to start saying, what do I have in my 401k? Who's voting? How did I vote? Same for institutions and red states. How are we voting? Because you know what? If you're an investor, you're voting. Somebody's voting with your money.
Absolutely.
I can just tell you that you're probably not happy with it, and you need to take back control of that.
Absolutely. Jerry, let me ask you a final question here. This obviously is an industry that you monitor closely, one that you have been and continue to be actively engaged in. Are there other threats here that we should be aware of?
Yes, there are. I just want to put in a good word for this week. The treasurer of Louisiana announced that they're not going to use Bank of America anymore because of the debanking. And he's right. We engaged with Bank of America. It was not productive. JP Morgan, we had productive conversations. Bank of America made a lot of promises, did nothing. Hats off to Treasurer John Fleming, who said, okay, you're going to debank, you're going to debank Christian ministries. We're going to unbank you. You fire us as you fire people as customers. We're going to fire you. So to your question, what's on the horizon? Anti-food. we're moving, the activist community in corporate boardrooms is moving from anti-energy to anti-food. They believe the only way to get to net zero is to cut food production in half, to move us away from meat, and also just to cut food production in general, and depopulation. I know that sounds crazy. It's like a Bond villain, but nevertheless, they're open about it. So there's a war on agriculture and a war on food that is now being gone into in the corporate boardrooms. We need to fight that one. We let them get ahead of us for years on the fossil fuel fight. We cannot let them get ahead of us on the food fight.
Yeah, can you imagine if that fight gets behind us? Jerry Boyer, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us both concerning news and encouraging news, all wrapped up together in one. Great job. Thank you for joining us today. All right, as we continue this conversation regarding big banks targeting conservatives and Christian organizations, I want to shift to my next guest, David Cox. He's the assistant director of the Arkansas Family Council, and they have a very close and personal experience with this whole issue of debanking. David, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
All right. So let's begin with the story. Explain what happened to your organization.
Sure. So, you know, obviously we're a conservative Christian pro-family organization in Little Rock, Arkansas. We've operated since 1989, and we rely entirely on donations from our friends for our funding. So like a lot of organizations, we accept donations via credit card. You know, our supporters expect to be able to give that way. And in 2019, we began working with a credit card processor called WePay, which was a Chase Bank company, and had no issues, great service, no complaints. And then out of the blue, on July 7th, 2021, at 10:29 a.m., I received an email from WePay saying, unfortunately, we can no longer support your business. Best of luck to you. We're closing your account. Very terse email. 60 seconds later, at 10:30 a.m., we were no longer able to accept credit card donations online. We didn't get any explanation about what happened. We eventually learned that WePay's trust and safety team had closed our account because they had designated us as a high-risk organization. And we don't know what prompted that designation. We never got an explanation. Fortunately for us, we were able to scramble, and within a matter of hours, we had switched to a different credit card processor who aligned with our values and wasn't going to cancel us without notice. We were able to switch, and we were able to continue operating and accepting donations and working with our friends. It didn't hamper us the way it might have other organizations. But we found it so troubling that such a major financial institution could treat a customer so unprofessionally, to cancel an account like that with virtually no notice and no explanation. And what was especially shocking for me was when I began sharing our story, we found we weren't alone, that there were other organizations with very similar experiences. So I'm afraid we may have been just one of many, but that was our debanking experience that we like to share.
That's a powerful, powerful story, David, and thank you for sharing that. And you're not alone. That's why this is becoming an issue, and it is specifically seems to be one that is targeting conservatives and Christian organizations. But although you were able to overcome that, it was still very close, was it not, within just a hair's breadth of being a major threat to the existence of the Family Council?
Absolutely. Yeah. I looked at the reports. About one third of our funding comes from donations that we receive online. If an organization loses that ability to process credit card donations electronically, even for a short time, it can be truly devastating. And, again, the fact that your account could be canceled with virtually no notice and no explanation, that's a very shocking reality, something that many people find disturbing. They don't realize that banks have this sort of power over organizations.
And they are not in any way required to give you warning beforehand. They can just turn the switch off, so to speak.
That's exactly right. You know, I went back and reviewed our customer service agreement, you know, the agreement that we all just check the box that says, oh, I agree, and we hit, apply. I reviewed it and I found that buried in that agreement was fine print that said they could cancel our account for any reason or no reason at all, and that they could do it with virtually no notice. And that was very telling, that that language was buried in our customer service agreement that we had to sign in order to do business with this banking institution.
So would you encourage people, when they are signing those and hitting the agree button, that's probably not a good idea? There's some wisdom in knowing what it is you're agreeing to.
There's always wisdom in reading the fine print. And, you know, what I tell people now is try to find businesses that align with your values. You know, we are seeing progress on the debanking issue with JP Morgan Chase and some others, but it still is good to find businesses that align with your values, that aren't supporting an agenda that you disagree with. And definitely read the fine print. And, you know, if you can, have a backup plan. Ask yourself, what would I do if I no longer had this service available? Because, you know, in our situation, that was a reality for us, that we woke up one day and all of a sudden we were unable to process donations via our website, and we had to scramble and put together a plan. I would not wish that on anybody.
No, I wouldn't either. And that is very, very sound advice that you are providing right now. And I hope people pay close attention to that. You know, there has been, fortunately, a growing backlash to these debanking practices. I was just speaking with Jerry Boyer a few moments ago. Louisiana is the most recent to basically push back to Bank of America and say, you're going to do that here, you're no longer going to be doing business here in Louisiana. So all the backlash is great news, but it happened to you at a time where not a whole lot of people were aware that this was taking place. So was it a case of alerting the public to what was going on? How has all the backlash come about?
You know, I think what I've seen personally is we were able to share our story with state legislators, and that resulted in legislative action and executive action in Arkansas, where there's been some pushback against the ESG agenda. We've seen state officials take steps to make sure that state money isn't being used to support financial institutions that debank, basically. But, you know, it gave us an opportunity once we started sharing our story. You know, we, as I said, found we were not alone, that there were groups like the Ruth Institute had been debanked. Obviously, Ambassador Brownback had been debanked by, I believe it was Chase Bank. And so as we began to share our stories with one another, I think we were all able together to draw attention to this serious issue. And I think we've seen the fruit of that over the last couple of years as state officials have taken steps. And, you know, you see shareholders and other concerned citizens make their voices heard on this. So, you know, I see it as an opportunity. You know, it happened to us early on, but we've been able to, I think, be part of the solution.
David Cox from the Arkansas Family Council, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your experience and your advice going through this process. God bless you. Y'all do a fantastic job there in Arkansas. Keep it up. And thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. You too.
All right, friends, that wraps up this edition of Washington Watch. Let me just encourage you before you go to bed today, this evening, share with someone else the importance of tuning in to Washington Watch. We look forward to being back with you tomorrow. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.